This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine with Misha and Fiona. And here right now, I think it's about 21 degrees in the beautiful air-conditioned studio.
It is. We have a beautiful little spot that we're sitting in. Thank you, Misha. Our listeners who might be tuning in, Macca is away, Nevena is away, so Misha and I are holding the fort. We'd love to hear from you if you have any intel that you'd like to, or any questions you'd like to add. Our first guest coming up this hour is May Aziz, spokesperson for Everybody's Home and Deputy Director of Anglicare Australia. Welcome to the program, May.
Thanks for having me.
So, May, I was interested to read an article that you wrote recently in The Guardian where you're talking about why taxpayers are propping up the price of empty holiday homes. Now, you know what? I'm actually really interested to hear a little bit more about the organisation, before we get into it, Everyone's Home, Everybody's Home. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, Everybody's Home is a national campaign to fix Australia's housing affordability crisis. We're made up of 500 housing and welfare organisations around the country, and we've also got 43,000 individual supporters, average Australians, who have signed onto the campaign because they want to fix housing.
And tell me, how long has Everybody's Home been in existence for? How did the organisation get started?
The campaign was set up in 2018, and it was basically set up because we had all these different organisations around the country who were interested in housing affordability and wanted more of a national voice and to come together under one platform, really. And so that's how it was set up. It was launched at the National Press Club in 2018. The 2019 election was a big one for housing affordability, and we're set to have another big election on housing affordability, I think, either this year or next year.
I think you might be right, because since 2018, things seem to have declined in housing affordability. So the organisation is obviously, or the campaign rather, is much needed, and no doubt will be ramping up towards the coming election. So there's many different aspects to housing affordability, and recently you wrote about the short stay rental system with Airbnb and stays. That is a system of a symptom of system that's unfair at its core. Would you like to tell us more?
Yeah, that's right. So Airbnb and stays, a lot of people treat them as a separate issue or its own kind of disruptive force. But I really think that this is a symptom of a housing system that's unfair. We have a tax system that allows hobby landlords basically to write off enormous amounts of expenses at the cost of the taxpayer, and also sell homes and make huge profits at a discount because of tax discounts that are also underwritten by the taxpayer. And what a lot of people don't know is that short stay hosts have access to the same tax handouts, really. So if you're a short stay host, you get access to negative gearing tax deductions, and they're pretty generous and pretty outrageous. I mean, you can write off things like artwork, weekly cleaning fees, all sorts of things. You can also write off the interest on your home loan, council rates, all sorts of stuff. And the home can actually be empty and you can still claim a legitimate deduction. You just need to be able to show the tax office that you've had a listing, that it's been listed somewhere, even if it's been empty. So a lot of state governments are looking at things like special levies on Airbnbs and taxes on vacant homes, and those are great things. Our campaign supports them. But at the end of the day, the only way we're going to stamp out this issue of empty holiday homes is if we change the tax system.
That is a very complicated situation, isn't it? That's not going to happen overnight. And I think that it is, Australia's tax system has a lot of reform, but it seems like it's very hard to get governments to. It's such a hot topic.
I guess one question, though, that's interesting is, if you're trying to make the laws harder for people to own holiday homes, Those homes are often located in sort of rural and remote areas or, you know, by beaches, etc. Will that actually address the housing crisis? I mean, are they the same houses that the houses we're looking to get people into?
Well, that's why it's a symptom. Like, it's a symptom of a system that's unfair. The fact that people are able to buy, you know, two or three or four investment properties and keep them empty is a system of a, is a, is the symptom, sorry, of a system that's unfair. But certainly in some parts of the country, we know that Airbnb is having a really big impact on affordability in and of itself. If you're living somewhere like Hobart, for example, or you're living on the Gold Coast, or you're living in Byron Bay, it is extremely difficult to find an affordable rental just because of the sheer number of homes that have been taken up by Airbnb and stays.
So you actually think that the housing market is being squeezed by people who are trying to accumulate a portfolio of properties where they're going to be putting them on Airbnb?
So it is a symptom of a housing system that is unfair. I'll just say it again. It is a symptom of a system that's unfair. It's not a problem in and of itself. Maybe it is in particular areas. But the real problem is that we've never had more homes per person in Australia, but they're very unfairly distributed.
Okay.
We know that wealthier people are taking up a lot more space and hoarding homes.
Fair enough. Look, I can see the moral logic of what you're saying. But I'm a little bit ambivalent about it because as somebody who's never owned a holiday home, I've always thought that the best thing is to know somebody who owns a holiday home. And I want to make it as easy as possible for those people that want to do that, to do that so we can go and visit their holiday homes.
Well, it's true. I've never owned a holiday home.
Sure, but it's sort of a losing equation because if your friend being able to own a holiday home is pushing up the cost of your weekly rent or your weekly housing, it's a losing game. I know I'd rather spend less on my housing and maybe, you know, put a bit of money into the odd holiday.
I do think that, you know, when you stay at an Airbnb and you have to pay the cleaning fees and it does sometimes seem a little bit exorbitant. They have minimum 2-day stays. And I think also in some areas, you know, if you go to Phillip Island, of which I know that Misha does, and I have a number of friends that live there, in the off season, it feels like a ghost town because there's, you walk around and there's sort of just all these empty homes. No one's visiting because it's out of season.
Yeah, it's true. I actually wonder, though, whether the sort of policy objectives that you're talking about achieving might be better achieved by more directly focusing on sort of the core problems, so negative gearing in particular and also capital gains tax concessions. I just wonder whether specifically rules around Airbnbs themselves, if you deal with that core problem, then you sort of solve the problem. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. Well, that was the point of the article I wrote, really, that people are trying to come up with these special taxes and special arrangements for Airbnb, but the real problem is just the tax system as a whole. We really need to get rid of these tax handouts for hobby landlords. The same tax handouts that are pushing up the cost of rentals are also the handouts that are driving the uptake of Airbnb stays. So I totally agree.
So it's sort of interesting because the Grattan Institute has released a lot of reports on changes to the capital gains tax regime and also negative gearing. And Bill Shorten took that to the election in 2019, which he lost. And there's been a lot of policy nervousness about that question sort of ever since. But there has been some discussion, I think, recently, I've noticed in the last sort of 3 to 6 months about bringing back that discussion about negative gearing. Do you think that you're making progress and do you think actually it is realistically on the political agenda, or do you think it's still too difficult a topic for, you know, Labor, which is in government currently, to address?
We see the role of our campaign as putting it back on the agenda and pushing politicians to respond to it. I know that Labor was burned in 2019, but they took a lot of things to the election in 2019, right? It's also important to remember that they took housing tax reform, capital gains tax and negative gearing to an election in 2016, and they actually won 14 seats. And when you look at the polling, only about 1 in 4 Australians really opposes doing anything about this. So there's lots of consistency in the polling. There's been 4 polls that have come out in the last month from Redbridge, Resolve, Essential, lots of polls basically showing that it's only about 1 in 4 people who really oppose doing something. And as many as half of all Australians actually support doing something, and a lot more are open to being convinced. And we have those results, even though there is no national leadership on the debate. Imagine how much more support there could be if a major party took this up.
The other side of that is that there's sort of been a grassroots movement of people sort of saying yes in my backyard and actually trying to encourage more higher density development. Which I think is sort of interesting because there are a lot in politics that argue really it's a supply problem. Do you think that's true, that the housing supply is the key issue here?
We've never had more homes per person in Australia than we have now. The number of homes per person has gone up at every single census. It totally outstrips population growth and immigration. What we have in the what we've had in the past couple of decades, because of the tax system and because of other issues, because of inequality as well, is housing that has never been less fairly distributed. So building more high-end apartments is not going to fix the problem. I'm all for building and I'm all for higher density development, but the key thing here is that it's not a solution in and of itself. The government needs to do something, to make those homes affordable as they get built. So what we've seen is a really strong push from the developer lobby, basically to frame themselves as the people who basically created this crisis as the solution to the crisis. And they resist any efforts to try and make these homes that they want to build affordable. They oppose any moves, for example, to limit rent increases. They oppose inclusion rezoning, which is where developers are required to build a certain percentage of affordable housing in the developments that they build. They oppose many of the real solutions. So absolutely, let's build, but we also need to push for measures to make those homes affordable because the market just doesn't have a track record of doing that on its own.
But the argument has always been that we need an increase in rental stock. The rental market is incredibly tight at the moment and very unaffordable. And the industry has always argued very strongly that things like negative gearing and capital gains tax concessions actually encourage people to become landlords, and without them, the rental stock situation would be even worse. I mean, how do you respond to that argument?
Well, I would just point to the facts. I mean, in the past 30 years, since we've had a much higher uptake of negative gearing and since we've had the introduction of the capital gains tax discount, housing has only become less and less and less affordable. If you look at who became landlords before we had this high uptake of negative gearing deductions and before we had the introduction of the capital gains tax discount, most landlords were positively geared. And what that meant was they owned their own home outright that they were investing in, and their money was coming from rental income. And what we've seen in the past couple of decades is that most of them are making a loss. That loss is being underwritten by the taxpayer. And that's really driven rent increases. You know, we've seen that landlords are now so highly leveraged. They're constantly raising rents. Rent increases of about 10% a year are basically baked into the system, which is enormous and really unfair. I actually don't know anyone who has a 10% wage increase every single year. So we know that this isn't sustainable. We know that it's driving unaffordability. And if it was driving up supply, that would have happened by now. We know that the homes that are getting built are just not becoming available as rentals. But we know that because we've never had more homes per person, right?
But surely too, if you make it more expensive to be a landlord by removing capital gain, by removing sort of negative gearing, for example, that would surely have two effects. I mean, negative gearing effectively does make it affordable to run the property at a loss, which means you can afford to charge lower rent. So surely if you remove negative gearing, it's going to push up rent.
And yet that's not happening. If that was going to work, that would have worked by now. It has only been failing, and suggesting that we need to do more of the same, I think is, it's frankly insanity. I mean, some of these people who we've encouraged to be landlords are actually the wrong people to be landlords. We've got tax settings that are encouraging the wrong people to be suppliers of housing, and we need to be looking in other directions, really. The government needs to step up and supply more housing itself.
But isn't there a risk if you take away negative gearing, which does provide a disincentive for owning a property, that actually you're just going to make the problem worse? I mean, surely that's a real
risk. Yeah, that's the same question. You've asked that three times now. Yeah. And what I would say is that the problem has been getting worse. And if this was going to work to either create more affordability or push down prices that would have worked by now. What we've seen in the past couple of decades is that it's only made things worse.
You know, May, I was thinking that we must be seeing some sort of generational change, because we will have, you know, the millennial age group is certainly the largest voting bloc now, and they're also the people that have probably, in general, the least access to owning multiple homes. So do you think that perhaps as, you know, in the future, we will see more pressure on the governments to make these changes simply because of the generational change in the voting and the types of people that are looking to build their own wealth, but perhaps in a different way?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're already seeing the government come under pressure to make some of these changes. We're seeing renters especially, but also people who are trying to buy their first home really gain more and more political power. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of years they become a political force that rivals the hobby landlords.
The federal government's got a housing scheme at the moment, and there is sort of a little bit of talk around public housing and moving more into the public housing space. Is that something that you think is an important part of the picture here, sort of government's embracing that again?
So the government is not really building public housing at scale at the moment. It set up a finance scheme for community housing providers last year under something called the Housing Australia Future Fund, which I think is what you're talking about. The governments around Australia are really good at looking like they're doing something on housing, but really we haven't seen them come to the table with a solution that matches the scale of the crisis probably since about 2019.
May, thank you so much. Look, it's been really interesting, been great to get your point of view and to hear about the campaign Everybody's Home. We thank you for your insights, and we look forward to hearing more from your organisation. So thanks for taking some time out on Saturday morning to have a chat with us on SatMag.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, May. So Misha, now we will be going to a quick break.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.